Hello and welcome to another episode of the PD Performance Podcast. I'm sitting here today with Ian Reeves, who works with the South Sydney Rabbitohs in the NRL. Ian has previously worked with the GPA in Ireland, so we talked about his transition from Ireland to Australia, how it differs working with Irish athletes versus Australian athletes, what it is he actually does on a day-to-day basis, and how he achieves success and helps the Rabbitohs to achieve success in their organisation out here in Australia. So great conversation for you guys today. Hope you all enjoy it. And if you do enjoy it, please remember to like it, share it and send it. Ian Reeves, welcome to the PD Performance Podcast.
PD, what's happening?
Yeah, not much. It's been a long time though. I think the last time I saw you was at Clodagh's birthday, I reckon, but it was only very brief. You were late and I was leaving early.
Oh God, that was, I don't think I can remember that, so that's like probably a good sign or a bad sign.
And before that, it was the golf, wasn't it?
Oh, the golf was Sunday, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was the best. Yeah. I did speak about it on the podcast already, so the listeners would be familiar that we had our little Ryder Cup tournament.
Don't mention it.
Yeah, Ian was on the Leinster team, so we all know how that went, but... What have you been up to? You've been busy, I'd say.
Yeah, it's been a busy couple of months. Went home at Christmas, which was nice to get back for kind of a month or three and a bit weeks after being here for the year, and then came back straight back into pre-season, which was hectic. Had a six-week block. The first day back, we went on a three-day kind of pre-season camp down in Jervis Bay, which was took years off my life. I don't know how the players did it. And then we had a kind of another 5 weeks, and then we were in America for 2 weeks. Came back, season started in Brisbane, here and there, and now I think we're in Sydney now for the next 4 or 5 weeks, which is, it's nice to be in your own bed again, you know, yourself, a bit of routine and all that good stuff.
That's hectic. So for our listeners, Ian works with the South Sydney Rabbitohs in the NRL, having previously worked in the GPA, and people will be wondering that are listening to this, mainly from a GAA background or a coaching background. How the hell does a fella that's working with the GPA end up working in professional rugby league in Australia? So talk me through that whirlwind.
Do you know what? It's a mad story, but one that when I tell people, they kind of laugh over it. Working away in the GPA had to do an internship in my second year of my undergraduate. Did it. Opportunities came around within the GPA to stay on full time. Did that. Ended up, was there for about 5.5, nearly 6 years. Lead player development and wellbeing coach, and me and the missus went for dinner on a Friday evening, and Kira kind of said to me, I'd be keen to go to Australia. Yeah, 100%, I'll be there with you. And due to her contract, it was there was a certain amount of time that she had left to do, and we kind of said May 2023, perfect. And she kind of said, look, Ian, I think you should have a think about what you want to do out there, because she's an accountant, and I suppose my role isn't black and white, it's a bit grey. So I said, yeah, perfect, I'll have a look into that, etc. The following week, fresh week, was down in Clare meeting a couple of, I think it was hurlers that day, down in Ennis, and I was driving home. I pulled into the Obama Plaza there to get a bit of petrol, yeah, just outside your hometown.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. What do you call it, yeah.
Yeah, outside, down your neck of the woods, and was pumping the car up, etc., and looked at the phone, at a message from the COO at the Rabbitohs. Saying, Ian, how's it going? I've heard a few things. Look, we're looking to fill our head of psychological wellbeing role. Would you be keen to have a chat? Sure, I came home and I'd figured it all out, like, you know. But yeah, the guys touched base with me, and then I considered it, had a few conversations at home, spoke with Kira about it, was expecting to get going a lot quicker than I actually did. And yeah, spoke with the coach, spoke with the CEO. Came out in September for a week of 2022. Met all the players, saw the facilities, which at the time was in Redfern, which was slightly different now to Heffron. But yeah, a bit of a mad story, but now I'm here and yeah, absolutely loving it, to be honest.
How did they find you though?
I reckon the way that it came around was when I was working with the GPA, the CEO at the time was kind of saying there was a little bit of a changeover in staff, and I'd only kind of been an intern and then a coordinator of the program. And he kind of said, look, Ian, two things are going to happen here. One is you're going to kind of find maybe something else over the next little while, or number two is you're going to jump into that player development and wellbeing department and just run it. And I was like, Jesus, like, what an opportunity, but I was in the deep end. It was pretty outrageous at the time, but part of that was upskilling. And I did a course over the just before COVID started with an Australian institute that were delivering it in Loughborough. So I flew over and back a couple of times, and there was a fella on that who was the central head of wellbeing at the NRL. So I kind of have two reporting lines I've got in the club and then at the NRL, and he was one of them. And from what I gather, I reckon the Rabbitohs hadn't really been able to cement somebody in the position for a while, and then a conversation came about, look, we're looking to hire somebody, do you have anybody in mind? And your man obviously dropped my name in. So yeah, pretty grateful that they brought me all the way from Ireland over, but it's been a bit of a mad story, all right.
It is, it's a bit crazy. Like, obviously you're working in two very different sports, but is the role similar to the one that you had at home, or were there like a lot of changes? Because obviously at home with the GPA, there was a lot of travel involved and working with different players in different counties.
Yeah.
Do you have different responsibilities with the Rabbitohs than you had at home as a result?
I suppose the logistics of the job are so different, because in the GPA you don't have a designated squad. You've got 32 counties, you've got 4 codes per county. I think there was something like 112 or 117 squads. So in terms of like connection with players, I'm jumping on a call with you when you're from this county, and then my next session would have been with somebody at the completely different end of the county in a different code in completely different circumstances. So that's very different. At the minute I've just got the one squad, I'm in the facility every day, a designated place to work, I see the players every day, so my connection's a lot deeper, which is slightly different, but my practice is very, very similar in terms of the coaching methodologies that I use to have good conversations with people, and the therapy kind of frameworks and all that kind of stuff that I use is quite similar, but logistically it's a lot easier when you're in the facility and you see the lads every day, you know.
A one-on-one, like face-to-face conversation is always better as well than maybe jumping on calls, or then obviously going and traveling to meet athletes as well. But did the role in the with the GPA prepare you at all for the role with the Rabbitohs, or was major challenges that you didn't foresee happening at all that you came in contact with when you moved out here?
No, 100% the GPA was a massive stepping stone, because like before COVID, the GPA used to outsource a lot of their service provision. So what used to happen when we didn't have the skill set internally is I'd sit down with you, I'd get a bit of an understanding as to what's going on for you, and then I'd designate you a service provider to work with you, and then I would work with you and the service provider to see what's going on and how you're tracking and all that kind of stuff. COVID hit at home. GPA were uncertain about what was going to happen with the GA and the budget they were going to get, so pretty much what we had to do was put the service providers on hold, and the internal staff then had to start doing it. So I remember sitting at home, my sitting room, which it was then put into it, or in the front room, which was then put into the home office over COVID, and everyone scrambling to get things together. And God, that first couple of weeks when you're starting to do one-to-one sessions with players in depth and you're the person that has to support them, like that was kind of like sink or swim.
Yeah.
But then over time, due to the length of COVID and what happened at home, the GPA then decided to stick with that model. And over that course, they supported with upskilling courses and a master's program in coaching psychology, and which was brilliant. But yeah, if I hadn't have got that kind of stepping stone, or if COVID, let's say, didn't happen, I don't know if I'd be sitting here with the Rabbitohs at the minute, like, you know.
So there was a benefit to COVID, for sure. For
well,
Reeves.
A small one anyway.
In terms of your development, for sure. But people will be wondering there, like, how would you explain what it is that you specifically do? And then would that definition change based on who you're talking to, whether it's an athlete, a coach, a friend, or a family member?
Yeah, it's interesting.
Does your mom know what you do, really? Like,
my mother still can't describe it, I don't think.
That's usually the way it is.
Yeah, I don't think my mother can't describe it. In all sense of purposes, I'm like a psychology coach for them. So as much as the lads have a strength coach or a rehab coach or an on-field coach, I just work with them on the psychological skills that they need to perform, whether that's on or off the field, stress, pressure, confidence, whether it's understanding who they are, sense of purpose, where they're going in life. And then another way that I might describe it is as a therapist. So I listen to their problems and help them figure out how they might solve it. One of the things as a coach is that more than likely won't give them a solution, but will help them figure out what the solution might be. So from kind of a self-determination theory point of view, that in order for them to figure out and to actually action what they want to do, they have to want to do it. Because I can tell them, look, I'll be having a conversation with a player, and I think most people would know what the fix is here, but unless you bring them around to that and they outline how they're going to do it, that's probably the biggest part of it. And then to, let's say, so there's kind of two different explanations to it. To a coach, it might be, look, I'm going to try and make your life a bit easier. To an athlete that is really keen and has maybe exposure to this stuff, you're just kind of building on it and advancing it. But then to a player that hasn't heard of this before, it's kind of just like a check-in, here to see how things are going off the field, how you're managing with the demands that are on you. So just kind of maybe tailoring or tweaking that, if you want to call it that, sales pitch, to depending on who's in front of you, is probably something that I had to do.
So sports psychology is a relatively new field or industry, and some players maybe in the last 20 years have been a bit reluctant to buy into it. Most players have bought into it now and they will participate in it, but then your specific role entails a little bit more than just the on the field stuff. It entails the off the field stuff as well. At times, do you find that athletes are more comfortable just focusing on the field stuff, and it takes a little bit of time to get into the off the field stuff? Or do you think you're a lot better now at showing them that the off field stuff really does apply to on the field as well?
There's a connection between both, because how can we perform on the field if things are going south off the field, and vice versa, you know? So I think there's a transfer or a crossover between both of them. One of the things that when I speak to them around kind of mental skills is that, if you call it, like, our three pillars are poise, persistence and presence, they're also equally valuable in life as much as they are when you're in the heat of battle and it's the game's level and there's 10 minutes left, you know. So helping them recognize how you can use these in everyday life, and that they're transferable skills when they do retire and all that kind of stuff, is probably an important part of it.
Have you found that there was any difference in working with those professional athletes in their, say, openness to talking about those things, as opposed to working with amateur athletes at home? Or maybe it's a cultural difference between working with Australian athletes versus Irish athletes, or is it the exact same thing?
I suppose at the end of the day, they're all human. The guys and girls at home are good at playing Gaelic football or camogie, and the lads over here are good at playing rugby league. They still have the same thoughts, emotions, feelings that then drive behaviour, so it's very similar on that front. But from a cultural point of view, like, obviously rugby league is made up of a lot of Pacifica backgrounds who probably are still quite a little bit behind in terms of their openness and the stigma that's there towards mental health and well-being and receiving support. They're very much probably the way Ireland was maybe 20 years ago, and discovered up your grand, there's nothing wrong with you, you're fine. So that took a little bit of time, but from a culturally in the club, there was a lot of work that needed to happen when I started in January 2023. The basic things, such as like where my desk was located when I started, was up in the corner, the back of the facility, where you're not seen. So if I'm in there the whole time, no one's going to see me, no one's going to know that I'm there. The players always kind of said that if there was another player in with the well-being coach or with the welfare manager, whatever term that they had for the individual before, there was something wrong with you and you don't really want to be seen in there. So over time, co-curated a program with the support of the players, got them to buy into it and help with using the language that they wanted to use. So our program now has kind of, it's person-centered, so we start at the middle with them, start at their core, who they are, what they're about, building their emotional intelligence, their self-awareness, their purpose, their values, all that kind of stuff. And then we work with them on what we call their daily toolkit, their next chapter, their people, and giving back. They designed it, so they've co-created it, so they're going to buy into it. We moved facility in April last year, which was well overdue, I reckon, for the guys. And there's an office space for me on the way as you walk into the facility, so the players walk by every day. There was a conversation if we were going to fog the windows or not. We decided against doing that, so which then helps with if a player's in there, it's very open. And then there used to be a sign on the door in the old facility that might have been there before my time, which was kind of confidential meeting taking place, door be closed, you wouldn't be able to see into anything. I now give the players the option if they want to close the door or not. 95% of the time the door is open and fellas are in, and because it's more proactive instead of reactive when we let shit hit the fan and then we have to deal with the mess, it's kind of like, yeah, this is going on for me at the minute, a little bit of a, whether it's an itch I need a scratch or I just need to fucking get this off my chest, and the door's open. And again, more often than not, there's another player barges in going, yeah, Ian, can I actually, when are you free? Are you free later on tomorrow? And I'm in the middle of a conversation with you as it is. So that's been really, really helpful. I think the coaching staff have a lot to play as well. So in fairness to the head coach, he's got me involved in everything that he thinks that I can add value to. So whether that's within the leadership group, I was in the job 2 weeks and I went to Melbourne for the week with the leadership group. So you've got 8 players, 4 coaching staff. We went down to Richmond, invaluable times getting to know them. Sit down with him once every 2 weeks. Without breaking confidence, we'll speak with him around how he sees players going and where he thinks I can support with key messages that need to be delivered or landed, or just see how he thinks the group is tracking. But there's been so many times where we've been at a team meeting, and whether he's joking saying it or he's being serious, he will say, Peter, you actually need to go and speak to Ian because you're all over the shop at the minute. And sometimes the lads laugh about it and sometimes the lads take it quite serious. So from that side of things, that's definitely, there's been a change, I reckon, within the club, which just comes with time, you know. It comes with time.
But what you do in the one-on-one meetings might be the same, but what surrounds it sounds way, way bigger than what you were doing with the GPA. Like, you have your hands in and you're involved in so many decisions in terms of where your desk is going to be landed in a facility, in terms of if you're going to block out the windows or not, if you're leaving the door open or not, what you're going to participate in conversations with the leadership group. Like, that's loads. So has there been a lot of trial and error in the last 2 years? And as a result of that, do you find that in the last 2 years you are a way, way better practitioner than when you first left Ireland as a result of the opportunity with the Rabbitohs?
100%. Like, even doing group workshops or small group workshops with them, and not every time you do it, they're not going to go as I had planned in my head to do it. Where the engagement mightn't be to the level that I would expect it. And in the past, I would have fought with that, if you know what I mean. I would have tried to reset the group and encourage them to do it. Whereas if you do that inside, you just lose them. So you just got to roll with it. You got to meet them where they are. But then also, there probably is an element of trial and error, but I think feedback was also really positive along the way. So consistently looking for feedback, consistently looking to hear from, whether if it's our head of high performance, our physio, the 34th man on the panel, or the captain, how do we think things are going? Is there anything that I need to do more of? Is anything you want to hear more of, see more of, feel more of, whatever it is? Whereas again, in the GPA or in my previous role, I wasn't embedded in a club, so I wouldn't have had that understanding. I was literally in workshop, one-to-one and out, you know, that kind of way. So yeah, there's definitely been a little bit of trial and error, but unreal learnings, I have to say. Yeah,
it sounds like your role has expanded a lot as well. So like, you've been putting forward to the coaches, would you like me to try this or would you like me to get involved in this? And the answer more often than not has been yes. Have you found that your role has expanded to a stage at any stage where you're like, okay, I probably need to just focus in on this now rather than trying to get my finger into more pies and kind of spread my awareness or my focus too thin?
100%. Like, what's the saying? Jack of all trades and master of none. Like, you know, so need to be selective at times when it's time maybe to maybe try something and expand yourself, or when it's time just to knuckle down and do it. So example of that was last week. Probably wanted to I measured the lads from an emotional health and wellbeing point of view every quarter, see how they're tracking, then sit down with them all on a one-to-one and go, this is where you're at, what are the raw ingredients? In fairness to them all, they're really solid. What's keeping them pretty strong, and where do we want to improve, and how do we consolidate, or where do we kind of a stop start continue with them? That needed to be done last week, so then it was just time, just need to put on that psychological wellbeing hat this week and just nail it. Whereas this week there was maybe a little bit more of something different, or I've done stuff with the senior management team on helping them build self-awareness for their own roles and leading their teams. So even picking and choosing when's the time to go with them, or there's players in need of sessions, when is the time to just knuckle down with them, when is the time to go with the coaching staff, when's the time to do stuff with the football staff, when is the time to do stuff with the leadership group, when is the time to focus on the mental skills stuff. So that's an ongoing challenge. I only spoke about it yesterday when the lads around, balancing those couple of balls in the air is probably something that is an ongoing reflection point, but more often than not a bit of a challenge. Yeah,
it's a lot of conversations with a lot of different people by the sounds of things.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
you get the opportunity by the sounds of things to develop really deep connection with everybody and relationships with everybody. Does it ever become hard to juggle all of those relationships and all of those balls to give enough to each of them, or do the players and the staff make that easy for you?
I suppose, look, if you were to sit 30 lads here in this room, you're obviously going to have a deeper relationship with some more than others, so in any line of work or in any friend group or whatever. So I think it's just acknowledging if I'm spending my time or having really loads of conversations with the players that I already have quite deep relationships with as it is, just being conscious of there's actually maybe a couple of players there that I'm not even halfway where I should be with them in comparison to the other guys. So I think awareness for me is probably another big thing. So last year in our end of season reviews, there was a couple of players that I did say to is, I want you in here more often. And I want to develop or deepen our relationship so that I can work with you at a better capacity. And they did acknowledge that. Some lads have taken it pretty well. Other lads, I still need to work towards finding a way to carve out that time to develop them a bit further. But yeah, there's a lot of conversations, but I think just being aware of which ones are at which level is probably important.
But it doesn't happen like that as well, I'd say. Like, it's built day by day, action by action. You garner that trust from them to get them in through the door. And then sometimes I would imagine it seems like all of a sudden they're bought in. They're like, okay, I need to give this some time and dedicate some time to work with you, Ian. How do you cater your approach to the individual? Because they are 30 different individuals who need to be communicated with in a different way. Do you constantly ask yourself questions around, am I being the best Ian for this situation, or the best friend or coach for this situation with this particular athlete?
Yes, like, again, different strokes, different blokes, yeah? Some lads want to come in and do a session in 15 minutes and get a quick win and get out the gap. Other lads want to spend 45 minutes on the most minuscule topic and debate it over and over again and nearly challenge me on why are we discussing this and why is this important and how will this work. And then other lads just want to come in and talk about what they did at the weekend, and so you kind of have to meet them where they're at. And I'm 100% cool with that, and supporting them at different stages of their journey. So yeah, I think me being adaptable in my style, or in my, if you want to call it, objectives, because it's, I'm setting myself up for failure. I think if I want every single player to be where I think the player should be, because they're all at different stages of maturity, they're all from different socioeconomic backgrounds, they all have different levels of like literacy and numeracy. So even putting a chart in front of some of them, they're like, yeah, get it. Other lads are like, what is this? So just non-judgmental, trying to meet them where they're at, and then taking time to support them. One thing I did note around kind of deepening a relationship was when I was with the GPA, before I even got into the coaching psychology space, the guys actually were like, in order for you to understand what goes on for the player, I'm going to set you up with a coach. And I remember speaking to the coach, and I came out of it feeling great, and that was probably the reason that I wanted to go to that avenue. But I remember speaking to him about kind of everyday life bits and pieces, and he was asking me really good questions. But in the aftermath, he was following up with me on things that I had said to him that I don't even remember saying to him. So the reminders app on my phone is not a pretty sight. There's things to check in on, and the smallest thing that you might say to me that you don't even remember saying, I'll have it in my note that you wouldn't even notice, and I'll in my follow-up. And it could be like, I'm sure there's ones there now for today around check in with the player around, he might have been doing his driving test, or he might have been, his mum might have been arriving over from New Zealand, or he might be doing an exam, or it could be the anniversary of a lost grandparent or something like that. And when you text the player or say it to them, if you see them that day and they go, how the fuck did you remember that? That just deepens relationships beyond belief. So that's a, it's a bit tricky, because it, where do you stop and where do you, but I try and document as much as I can of that kind of stuff.
Shows that you care and you're bought into them. And 100%. Not just them as athletes, as you said, them as people and what's going on in their lives, which is obviously something that you've figured out over time. Was that something that you put into practice back home, or is it something that you've gained more capacity for as you've come over here and now the phone is just hopping constantly?
Well, I suppose at home you had 4,000 players, so it was a little bit harder to keep track of when everybody was doing
their driving test.
Yeah, whereas here you've got 35 lads, so you can go so much deeper and figure out a lot more. It could be like their partner's going for a pregnancy scan, or as I said, loads of different examples. Just the things that I think are going to be important to them, and me just, whether it's the following day, how did yesterday go with Shannon, or how did yesterday go with Kira, whatever it is, you can just see them when you say it, they're like, fuck, how do you remember that? So yeah, that's an important piece of the puzzle, I think, in deepening those relationships with the lads.
Do you think you've improved your capacity to have those deep conversations since you've come over and switch between issues? Because like, obviously having all of those really emotive conversations could be quite taxing, I'd imagine. And especially if players are dealing with very different topics, you're having to switch on the fly because you have this player coming in at this time, and then 2 minutes after I have to change my hat that I'm wearing completely to have a completely different conversation in a different type of style with a different player.
One thing I've got so much better at, when I was working with the GPA, I was brutal at it because it was on Zoom. So you get off the phone 2 minutes and there's actually nearly another fella sitting in the waiting room, and you're like, you don't even have a second to write up, you don't have a second to think, you don't have a second to look back at notes from, okay, when was the last time I was talking to Peter, what did I speak to him about? Whereas now, if a lad does come in, because they're going to be in the facility for the rest of the day, I'll just say, Cookie Latrell, give me 10 minutes. I'll just get up out of the desk, get a coffee, get some fresh air, walk around the facility, go to the loo, whatever it is, come back, and then it's near like a reset. But yeah, that practice of,
I think, decompressing a little bit.
Oh, you'd need to, man. Yeah. Because I remember when I was working with the GPA, especially when working at home, you'd be on Zoom from 9 a.m. to sometimes 7 p.m. and you'd be getting into bed and you're like, your head is just absolutely fried. So have my own coach and own mentor who was challenged me on only doing 4 sessions a day. It's very hard to say no to somebody. If you've done your 4 and a fella comes, can I talk to you? My natural
inclination
isn't going to be like, no, I've done 4, man, chat to you tomorrow. So if it comes, it comes. But like, yeah, just that whole protecting my energy and stuff, it's something that I'm still working with. I'm sure people at home would say he needs to do more work on it.
People I know would.
Yeah.
Have you found that the 4 is a nice little sweet spot for you? Because potentially if you did 6 or 7, those final 3 wouldn't be to the same quality as the first 4.
100%. Like, and probably still at the moment, my first session on a Monday morning or the first day of the training week is still probably better than the last one I do at the end of the week.
At least you're aware of it though.
Yeah. So it's just trying to figure out ways to... It'd be like it's like a player, right? The first carry that you've got in the game is going to be probably a little bit better than the last carry you have in the game, just due to the demand that you've been under in over the course of that match. So for me, it's just trying to find what I need to do at my half-time point in the week, or let's say today we're not training, so trying to protect the day that I'm not in the facility doing the one-to-one stuff around what do I do so that I'm ready to rock for the end of the week. The 4, like, there were stages when I worked in the GP, I was doing maybe 35 sessions a week. And you're nearly in recovery mode from Friday to Sunday, and then it starts again. And that was just due to the demand from players and the small team that we had. I don't have that demand at the minute. I'm probably doing between 10 and 15 deep 45-minute sessions a week at the minute inside. And then you've got 10, 15-minute conversations. There could be 20 of them. Which is
that's
perfect.
What that athlete needs.
Yeah,
the 15-minute one.
Yeah,
so a touch up or a conversation, just a catch up.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's just an ongoing challenge. That energy formula: what gives it, what takes it.
In the last 2 years since you came into this role, then it sounds like there's been a lot of personal development and self development in terms of how do you be the best coach that you possibly can be. Do you think that you have progressed at the same rate as the lads you've been working with have in relation to that? Or were you pretty well developed and pretty self-aware coming out here already?
I'd like to think I'm very self-aware, but there's always more, you know. I reckon there's always more that you probably could do. I think moving away from home out here is a personal development challenge as it is. Homebird, brilliant relationship with my parents, younger sister, lots of close friends that are still at home. So I did move out of my own because Kira was still working at home. So that was a challenge in itself, into a brand new environment. The Aussies are different to the Irish. Figuring that out was definitely a personal development kind of process. But now I the way that I probably describe it, I kind of go in peaks of it. So like, there might be a week where I burst and I'll feel like I'm figured something out or have developed on a personal note, and then there might be a week where I'm just, don't use the word coasting, but I'm just getting done what I need to get done.
That's life though, isn't it?
Yeah, just taking the foot off the gas every now and again, you know. So since we got back from America, I don't think I've been in the gym in like about 10 days, and I just can't think of anything worse than going in there at the minute, even though I probably know I need to. Or like even reading a book before bed. I couldn't be arsed at the minute.
Start of the season though.
Yeah, it's start of the season is right. Yeah. So yeah, kind of
it, and you're aware of it as well.
Well, that's, yeah. So there's probably big shit. We're probably going to have a bit of a sprint of it next week, you know yourself.
Nice. Was it hard moving out? Because one thing that you do very, very well from what I've seen and what I've heard is you are a big homebird and you're big on family. And you went home in December, as you said, to see everyone, friends and family. And then you caught up with your parents in Vegas as well. Do you find that dedicated time where you have a little bit more time with them is filling that bucket enough at the moment, or is there a part of you that's still like, oh, I'd love to move back home to Dublin? Yeah,
I don't miss place, I miss people, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people would be in the same boat that are out here.
Nobody misses Stillorgan, mate.
Yeah, no, be hard to, in fairness, the shopping centre. But yeah, no, like you'd miss just the experiences that, like, there's times where I'd be, let's say, down around on a Saturday morning where you're like, you know what, wouldn't you love X or Y or Z to be here with you, or that kind of thing. But no, I'm pretty comfortable at the minute. Plans in place for the folks to come out. Some more friends are coming out. Still weighing up what I'll do next Christmas. But yeah, at the minute, it's filling the cup the way it should be, I think.
How do you keep on top of those relationships? Because people will be interested. Probably players are interested, and they probably do ask you from time to time, because they might necessarily be from Sydney, like you said. They might be from New Zealand. They might have all their family at home. So do you offer advice to them in regards to what might be best for them? And often is that the way that you go about things as well, is maintaining those relationships and connections with people at home?
Yeah, I think I've actually had a few conversations with maybe some of the younger players that have joined the club that have maybe moved away from home, and it's a good conversation because I can resonate with them. They might be a 2-hour drive away. I'm like, mate, I'm a 24-hour flight away and 10 grand. But yeah, for me, what works for me is on the way to work in the morning, and it's a 10-minute, it's not even, it could be a 10-minute call with dad. It could be a 10-minute call when the lads, voice notes, FaceTimes. I probably do it frequent, but not that time consuming. I know others that won't speak to their mates or friends or whatever, and they'll be on the phone for nearly 2 hours. To be honest, that would nearly drain my energy too much. I just like the little, probably speak to my parents more than I spoke to them when I was living in Sandymount, 10 minutes from home, than I did then when I was back home to what I do now. So yeah, I just think there can be a stage where I'm like, fuck, I've nearly got 6 unopened conversations here on WhatsApp I really need to reply.
That's not many.
Yeah, well, when your mother's looking for you, it is.
Yeah, true.
But yeah, like, I just try and designate it a couple of mornings a week, just to be like, yeah, I'll give you a call in the morning on the way to work, killing your commute time, or in the evening when you're out for a stroll or whatever. That's probably the best way I do it.
It sounds like you're very on top of everything, like you're some sort of Superman. How do you get time away from trying to respond to everybody, try to send all those reminders, to spending time with Kira, to phoning the parents? Like, that's a lot.
Mm.
People hearing this are probably like, geez, Ian must be glued to the phone.
I love switching off. I love having fun, you know.
No.
You do know. So yeah, just kind of trying to be clear with boundaries, I think. Probably in the last couple of weeks I've taken work home a little bit too much. But like last night, I had a Monday from mayhem. Yeah. Yesterday, and I just texted two of the lads, went down for a swim, was down at the beach for maybe 45 minutes, felt like a new man coming home. So I come back to, and it's probably the art, nearly a common theme, but that I think that awareness is so important, to know when the candle's burning pretty fast here, I need to do something about it. So yeah, just trying to keep a couple of balls in the air, but then giving things the focus that it needs when it needs it, and then also just switching off when you need to as well.
Do you work with the athletes around setting boundaries?
100%.
Is it something that you find a lot of athletes, and maybe coaches as well, and people in general, are not that aware of and not that capable of doing because they've never addressed it, essentially?
Yeah, like there's a young fella in particular that comes to mind that's playing for us at the minute, who he could be playing the game on Saturday in his head on Monday evening when he gets home, and it's still playing in his head Tuesday evening, Wednesday evening. And the conversation with him is, he knows it's not the right thing to do. I know it's not the right thing to do. But like, what impact's it having? Is it productive? Is it unproductive? Sleep, energy, performance anxiety, and everything else in between. So 100% that's switching off. I think it was one of the Limerick lads that told me, and I don't know if it was Paul Kinnerk or John Coyley, said, if you can't switch off, how can you actually switch on? And it stuck with me ever since. So if you're constantly on, when you're forced or when you're in the environment where you need to be on at your best, if you're the light that's been on the whole time, you're not going to be shining very bright, I don't think. So yeah, I think it's an important one. I think it's a really important one for athletes.
Have you always been comfortable talking about these topics that you're talking about with athletes, or has it come over time through more experience in doing so?
Over time, man. It's like riding a bike. Like, you're not comfortable the first time, and then over time you get very comfortable with it. Then you're cycling with no hands on the handlebars, like, you know? Yeah, over time. I remember the first couple, I was like, this is really awkward. And it's really uncomfortable. And I was nearly worried what they'd say. And nearly felt like I had to figure it out all on my own. But yeah, over time it's become, if I feel that somebody's beating around a bush and I kind of have a feeling, I'll just ask them straight up, I'll just go direct at it. And more often than not, they might him and haw, and then they'll come back and they'll say, actually, yeah, that is what it is. But yeah, as I said to you, when COVID started and we had to sink or swim with the GPO, I was very uncomfortable for the first couple of weeks. I would nearly be nervous doing it, whereas now I'm very comfortable with it.
Is that your major technique that you fall back on to get rid of that awkwardness, say, or to kind of facilitate an environment where the athletes feel comfortable about talking about these topics?
That, yeah, to some extent. And then the other one is just being comfortable in silence. Like, there's been times where it was a big part of our master's practice in certain modules around the being comfortable in, if you ask a question and they don't answer, don't jump in again and again and again, and try and reword your question or say, do you know what I mean, or anything like that. Just be comfortable. So that's also been a big thing that I had to work on, because naturally I'm a bit of a yakker. I'll talk and I'll comfortable in talking, so being comfortable in it being a bit awkward is definitely something that I've had to do a bit of work on. But it's been good, it's been very good.
You're probably less awkward now as a result of that as well, so there are less awkward moments.
Yeah, so like if I do leave them off and they're kind of looking around or silence for a few minutes, I just nearly distract myself or just maybe look away or focus on something else, or I said, you know what, once you think about this question, I'm going to give you a couple of seconds. I'm going to give you maybe 30 seconds and I might start preparing a tool that we might use in a flip chart or something, which then provides me with that outlet a little bit instead of just sitting there looking at them.
And it's probably necessary as well, because the questions you're asking aren't really always like a thinking fast response, they're a thinking slow response, so they actually have to take time to think about it.
Yeah.
And see if that's going to actually apply practically, if it's going to work. So they need to kind of ponder and question themselves before they just give you an answer, because you're not looking for just an answer, you're looking for an answer that's more correct than it is wrong, let's say.
Well, yeah, I'm looking for an answer that they're not bullshitting me. And it's also a question that more than likely they won't have heard in everyday conversation, if you know what I mean. So if you go back to your deepening relationships, and over time you've got to know this player and he's new to this support structure, new to having these kind of conversations, and you fucking hit him with a hard question and he's kind of going, he's nearly like, whoa, that's a bit, it might be a bit deep. And he can give the easy response, but sometimes it's not the accurate one. So I think also I'm very comfortable in asking the question. Some people aren't comfortable answering it. So that's why I think the silence and just giving them, going to give you a second or two to have a think about this question. And then maybe just me doing something so that they don't feel awkward. It's not for me, I don't feel awkward. It's so that they don't feel awkward. Another way that I've done it with one of our senior players at the minute is we do weekly sessions. And again, trying to be innovative, so it's not just, oh, I have to go in here and talk to you, and it's going to be the same thing as I'll get them. I want you to answer this question by drawing it. And I remember him looking at me going, are you messing? I was like, yeah, there you go. A couple of markers, blank piece of A3 paper. And man, the conversation we had was, it was a bit left field now, but it was so good to get him talking about something that probably wouldn't have come up if we didn't use that technique, you know?
With those deep, hard-hitting questions and with that task that you've just mentioned there, though, and a left-field conversation, it would seem that that could be quite taxing for the athlete as well. So do you allow them to kind of come to you and set their next session? And then are your follow-ups, those informal follow-ups generally, where you're like, oh, how did such and such go? So it's an opportunity for them to reschedule with you, rather than what some coaches or practitioners might get wrong is like, okay, we're going to schedule it in again in 2 weeks' time, and they might not be ready for a conversation in 2 weeks' time.
Yeah, I'll always put it to the client or to the coachee. So typically give them the three cases. Scenario one is that you drive on, you let me know when you want to catch up. Scenario two is you're going to let me know on a certain date, on a certain time, how you're tracking. Or scenario three is that you tell me when you want me to check in with you. And more often than not, it's either option two or three. Because what I found with athletes is they want to be held accountable. If you do a strength test with a player, they're going to want to come back in 8 weeks' time or 12 weeks' time to retest. It's the same principles with this. So there's nearly a bit of a, I'm going to prove it to you that I can do this. Underline it as well. So, but I'll always provide the player with the choice as to, do you want to go ahead and see how we track? You let me know. Might hear from you again, might not. I check in with you or you check in with me. And they typically go with the check-in.
Is that the same as home?
Yes. Yeah. At home, again, I'd say in my entire experience of it, I'd say it's probably 10% of let me drive on. And then kind of like a 50-40 of one or the other two.
So what are the major cultural differences that you've noticed then in terms of, now it is difficult to decipher whether they're cultural differences or differences in terms of professional versus amateur, but in terms of how the athletes approach this work? If there are any, maybe it's the exact same.
I suppose the major difference here is that the guys I'm working with here in South Sydney are professional athletes. Mm. They mightn't have built the skill set to do certain things that a dual career athlete like an intercounty GA yes. player would have. So there can be a little bit of hand holding.
But they don't know how to do it because they've never had to.
Exactly. So there's a superb fella who's joined my team as our Pathways Wellbeing Manager. He played with the club for 15 years. His name's Jason Clark. We have a Jason Clark Award in the club, which represents who he is as a person and the values that we want to represent. He started with us in August after playing with Warrington in Super League in the UK for 2 or 3 years and then in France. And I was like, Jace, great to meet you, et cetera, et cetera. How are you tracking? And he goes, Ian, this is my first time sitting at a desk.
Wow.
Yeah. He was like, mental. I was like, cool. Well, what I think would be really good for you to do is... I gave him maybe 5 questions and I said, present this back to me in any way you want, PowerPoint, just speak to me about it, scribble notes, and what's PowerPoint? You know, so there are the assumptions that I had to leave behind and not to, again, don't be judging the players on it. So roundabout way of the way that the lads probably do it is probably a slower pace than what I was experiencing with the guys in the GPA doing, because some of the players that I was working with, they might have been business owners or nurses or physios or teachers, well equipped to do some of the tasks that they thought they needed to do. Whereas these guys, their bread and butter is throwing a rugby ball around. But they've so many transferable skills that is within them that's nearly on my desk to help them unlock them and realise their potential. That might sound a bit fluffy, I suppose, but that's my job, is to support them in expanding on who they are, what they can be. You're more than just a footy player. and giving them the tools and, I suppose, co-creating their goals and targets that they need to do in order to get where they want to be.
I love Fluffy anyway, so don't worry about it. And like, Fluffy is a term used generally in this instance by people that are uncomfortable talking about the things that you're talking about.
Yeah.
And they don't understand the value. And like, as I was saying to you before the conversation, being over in New Zealand with their National Sevens squads last week, there was probably a lot of talk about things that would be considered fluffy at home, but there was no element of fluff there because there was no barriers. Everybody was open, everyone was bought in, and it works as a result. So yeah, I think podcasts are for fluffy conversations, so don't worry. But I would imagine that, like, at home, we would say, and people would talk about, there being maybe generational differences between players' capabilities of doing the specific tasks and executing the specific tasks you just talked about. But what it sounds like here is the players are on such a level over here because they've all just been professional athletes their whole career that they're almost struggling with the things that maybe the younger athletes at home would struggle with a lot. Are there any generational differences within, say, the athletes out here that you notice in terms of their application of things or even their skill sets? Or is that natural?
I think it's pretty natural. I think one of the things that I have noticed is probably the maturity of the athlete is delayed out here, I feel. So your 25-year-old or 26-year-old, similar age to ourselves, isn't as mature as the 25 or 26-year-old would be at home. And maybe that's due to the exposure or the life skills that they've had to develop, simply due to the fact that to play Gaelic games at home, it's non-negotiable that you have to put bread on the table and you have to work and you have to go to college and you have to do something. And I think even though there has been a narrative at home that all GAA players are teachers and go into teaching, there's still the skill set that you have to develop and the transferable skills that they've got, and they've got exposure to tapping into over the course of their college courses, and then if they do teaching or whatever they do, it doesn't really matter. Whereas our guys, there probably is still a push for them to educate them on, we need to be doing something outside of rugby league. You need to be doing something, because I've said this analogy a couple of times to the players and some of them really liked it, some of them don't. But if I say to you at the start of your rugby league career journey, you're going to jump into an airplane, okay? And we don't really know how high the airplane's going to get. We don't know the trajectory of your career. But at some stage, you're going to be thrown out of that airplane. And we need to have a parachute to be able to pull, unless you want to have a very, very hard fall. And some guys are really good at it. Like, if you look at like Latrell Mitchell, who's probably our star player, one of the most prolific players in the game, the stuff he's doing off the field is actually incredible. Like, he's got his own brand. He's very into his farming, very passionate about it, very passionate about Indigenous people and their community and what's important to them. If he finished rugby league in the morning, he's A1. I think on his Instagram bio he says part-time footy player, full-time farmer, which speaks volumes about his identity as a person. But I know in the same building there's a player there that all they want to do is become a footy player, and they want to get in the airplane and go as high as they can, not knowing that the head coach could turn around tomorrow and say, mate, contract isn't being re-signed, or a long-term really bad injury, and then they've nothing to pull. So it's a big one. It's a really big one to be supporting players with finding out who they are, what they want to do, what their skill sets are, what they're passionate about, and then helping them on that journey of being the best footy player they can be. But then also, there's more to life than just footy.
Because you've spoken in the past about athletic identity and the importance of not putting too much of your, say, wrapping up too much of your personal identity in playing your sport and having outlets, say, or things outside of it. Like, And I'm sure a lot of GA players are the same, that they will focus a lot on their GA career and not too much on everything else. Is the major kind of adverse or consequence of not doing so out here being you have no skill set, you have no way of creating income after this, or are there additional issues that players might be presented with at home that can happen to the athletes out here as well if that rug is pulled from underneath them and they suffer an injury or they can't play anymore?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think the ongoing expansion of that concept of athletic identity is just so important, that you're more than just an athlete. So if I say to you, right, if you have a bad day in work, are you going to let that bad day in work ruin the rest of your week? People would be like, no, are you mad? I'm going to go for a few pints, meet the lads, have a bit of crack. Whereas if you had a bad game, for someone that has a high level of athletic identity, they'd be like, yeah, I am. That is, I'm not going to lock myself away. And that's when it gets very problematic. So when you put those two comparisons together, I think it's pretty clear that actually, yeah, what you're talking about does make a lot of sense. The thing or the resistance that I do face with the players is I want to find something, I want to do something, but I don't want it to take away from my footy. And I'm like, yeah, perfect, we have 168 hours in the week, you're in the building for max 40 hours of the week, you sleep for 7.5 hours a night, you have loads of time in your week to do, if it's 2 hours of a course over the course of a week, or if it's doing something voluntary or figuring something out or studying 3 hours a week, it's better than doing nothing. So it's a complex enough one, I think.
Do you trial different things with them? Do they go and say, I'm going to try this week, and then they come back and are like, no, I didn't like that, I want to try something else?
Yeah, so one of our players at the minute actually is long-term injury, right? He's been injured since last September. He's still got, we don't know if it's his, what he's been told is between 12 and 18 months. So you can imagine for a guy who just wants to play footy how challenging that is. But we've put a bit of an emphasis on a dual career, kind of at the end of it, kind of developing as a person outside the game. So we've kind of got like 2 week blocks where we kind of nearly co-design mini projects. And one of them is maybe like building on his skill set or on his network, or doing a course or going to a conference, or putting himself in an uncomfortable position where he needs to go and do a promo with a sponsor or something like that. And as much as maybe in the past he would have done it and not thought too much about it, we kind of come back on, review it and go, okay, well, what did we kind of get out of that? Is it something that we want to put on the list or take off the list for moving forward? So yeah, little projects, little experiments with them. And it comes back to then that bit of, fuck it, yeah, I'm going to do this and proving that I can do it and show them that I want to do it and all that kind of stuff, because they're competitive lads, like, you know. So yeah, there's a lot of that going on.
Final question before the quickfire questions.
Yeah.
Is there a need or scope for a role like yours in every organisation and every sporting organisation, be them professional or maybe don't even term it professional because we're taking GA into account, but at the elite level?
I'm obviously biased, yeah. I think so. And the reason I think so is I think that the people that you have in your organisation are your most valuable assets. So if you don't look after them, they're not going to be satisfied, happy, content, challenged enough, see progression, feel loved and cared for, that we know all those things are very important for people. So yeah, 100%.
And it helps with culture, I'm sure. And as you said earlier, it makes the coach's job a lot easier, which is, given that they have such a difficult job, that is a big thing for them to not worry too much about, in that, as you said, your head coach can say, you need to just talk to Ian.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I personally do think it is supportive. I think the challenge that you would face is with the structure of the sport, the numbers, the competition structure, what can you do in the right way that's going to have the most amount of impact, if that makes sense.
What is the next best option if you can't get somebody in there every day? Like a consultancy role or somebody drops every so often?
Yeah, so like there's been stuff that I've done where it's consultancy. As a consultant, it's brilliant to be able to go in and do it, but if I was an organisation, I'd be kind of looking at that with a combination of upskilling the Indians.
Yeah.
So the consultant comes in and does stuff with the wider group, but then also works with some of the Indians to upskill them so they can become nearly middle chiefs to deliver some of the work over time. A very clear program that you're going to deliver with clear outcomes and clear objectives. People on the ground to be able to deliver it, and then the appropriate resources then that people can use, because you're not going to be there at every time of the week, you know. That would be my kind of way of going about it.
Absolutely. Well, it sounds like you've found a good role for you. Quick four questions. First one, proudest achievement to date.
Do you know what, I was thinking about this and it's a tricky one, but I reckon the one that I was thinking of was when I left the GPA, the guys got me a photograph framed of feedback that I've got from some of the players, who probably 2,000 players I've worked with, and there was feedback kind of in text form. And yeah, that was I was shocked at that. That was like, I think it all came back to me kind of like, oh yeah, that was a good couple of years that I've had here. So that was a big one.
That's class. Favourite athlete of all time?
Dan Carter, I reckon.
Yeah, solid. His book is savage as well, the audiobook. And I think he released another one, so there's a recommendation for the listeners. What's the biggest thing you've learned in the last 12 months?
Ooh, Jenny Mac. I think be yourself. Again, probably going into a professional sporting environment, alpha male, yeah, you know yourself. You can try and put on a X, Y, and Z, but I think just being myself was much better, and then delivering what you can deliver. So yeah, I think being myself is probably a big one.
Nice. Self-awareness again. What would you tell your 18-year-old self?
Do hard things. Yeah. If I go back to that example where Paul Flynn, who was the CEO of the GPA at the time, said, Ian, two things are going to happen here. You're going to rock and to maybe figure out something else, or you can step into the player development and wellbeing department and just do what you can. If I'd chosen the easy exit, I probably wouldn't be here. So yeah, I think doing hard things is, even though you might at the time you're like, why did I decide to do this? But yeah, I think that's a big one.
Well, I'm glad to have you here today, and I'm sure all the Rabbitohs are glad to have you out here as well. Best luck for the rest of the season, and thanks for coming on today.
Cheers, good man.